Are you waiting for the ending? How many of you have a kind of a cartoon image of Samson in your head from childhood Bible or storybook? Yeah, but how many of you have heard this preached in a worship service? Yeah, I never have. Here we go. So Samson's story doesn't begin in adulthood. It begins in before his childhood. Samson's mom is barren. She has an infertile womb. How many times have we heard that story in the Bible? How many names, what names come to mind for you? Sarah and Abraham. Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist. It's a recurring theme in the Bible, in both the Hebrew Bible and the Christian Testament, that these wombs that are empty are somehow going to give birth to hope. The difference, though, for Samson's parents is, unlike Abraham and Sarah, they don't have to journey in the wilderness to prove their faith. Instead, Samson's mom twice receives an emissary of God. Some kind of angel comes to her and says, if you will be pious, if you will consecrate this baby to God, make this baby a Nazarite, you will be blessed with one. And then in classic myth and legend and folktale form, the emissary comes one more time, a third time, this time with Samson's father present. And he, like Abraham, says, oh, we need to have a feast for you, guest. And so they build up a fire for the feast, and then the angel disappears within the fire. So from the get-go in Samson's life, we know something special is going to happen. We've got a barren womb, we've got an angel, we've got magical happenings. All the signs are there to expect greatness of Samson. Do we get it? I'm not sure. Fast forward then, the story does, to his adulthood. And Samson announces he's going to go marry this woman. So he marries her. But then he divorces her, or technically gives her away to one of his good friends, because in a riddle contest, Bob, Charles, in a riddle contest, his first wife sides with her family instead of him. So he gives her away. I know, you wouldn't do that to Dinah. You would not do that. Now, this doesn't stop Samson later from showing back up at his first wife's home and demanding sex. That's who our... That's who our hero is. And then just before his encounter with Delilah, Samson kills 1,000 people with the jaw of a donkey, which perhaps explains why people want him dead. He's clearly very powerful and dangerous. But this powerful, dangerous man falls in love with Delilah. He falls in love, which it doesn't say about his first wife. In that case, he just announces, I'm going to go marry this lady. He falls in love. Is Delilah in love? No, Delilah's getting paid. Do we hear any echoes in the Christian Testament? Who gets paid? Judas. There's no way to read the Christian Testament without knowing the Hebrew Bible. The echoes are all there. So Delilah's getting paid. She's getting paid to learn how to break his power. But not only that, but how to torture him. These people really want to hurt him. And so Delilah keeps going to Samson. She nags at him. How old is that stereotype, apparently? And breaks him down, wears him down to death to share where his strength comes from. This raises a lot of questions for me. Why does Samson keep answering the question when he knows what's going to happen? What do you think? Twice the Philistines came and did exactly what he told Delilah would hurt him. And then he still answers a third time. Why? What does this suggest about Samson? He's kind of dumb. Thank you, Cornelia. He's in love. So Sue had a great take on this she just shared with me. He's blinded by love. That is much more uplifting than where I am going to go today. So hold on to that if you need to. So dumb, blinded by love. What else? Arrogant. Yeah, because why was he surprised that having his head shaved mattered? The reason he has not cut his hair is because he's been consecrated to God. He's blessed of God. And yet somehow he's surprised that when he gets his head shaved, he doesn't have God's power anymore. Hubris? It's gone too well for him in his life? He hasn't been humanized? Yeah, America. Ooh, I like that. So Amy Erica's saying maybe he just doesn't really get his source of strength. Well, think about it. We don't know what it's like to live in someone else's body. If this is how he's always been, how does he know it'll be different? So that's a much kinder read. I like that one too. So as we know, Samson gets tortured. They gouge out his eyes. But eventually his hair grows back. And one day he's able to push the column walls and kill not only the people who humiliated and tortured him, but also himself. Which leaves me with the same question I had about Ruth and Naomi last week. Is this a happy ending? So with Ruth and Naomi, they had this terrible grief of so much death, but at least they had each other. They had Boaz, they had their new home community, and they had little baby Obed. So they had sorrow, but also they had this birth. Is this a happy ending for Samson? Is it a triumphant ending? Denise, you're saying no. No. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I didn't know that origin story, but I believe it. I mean, we have lots of both Christian and Jewish traditions where you don't cut your hair as a way to consecrate yourself to God, whatever your understanding of the hair is. Jim? Okay, you seem ready. I'll keep my eye on you. It looks like this story might, by its placement, be intentional in its lack of positivity. So this is in the book of Judges. They are not judicial judges as we're used to. But the ancient Hebrew people were not ruled, but they were guided by what were called judges, community leaders who, to a certain extent, would work with each other across a region. Samson is the last of the judges. But unlike the judges who went before him, he doesn't lead an army. He doesn't lead a community. Samson is only for Samson. Samson works only for himself. He doesn't help anybody else. So the placement of that story where it is in the book of Judges, right before Kings and Samuel, might be a setup for why the people then start demanding a monarchy. Because we have this transition in the Hebrew Bible where the people say we need a king, and that ultimately gets us to David. So maybe this story of a failed judge is a setup for a good king. So what does that do for us today? 21st century Iowa Christ seekers. We could say, well, this is the Hebrew Bible. Whatevs. That's not related to us. Except we have equally complicated stories of violence, of death, of ambiguous endings. We've got Holy Week. Why do we tell this story of Jesus thirsting and suffocating to death? I know that we have Easter. We have this good news of the resurrection, but is that easy to explain? You don't have to say yes just because I'm standing here. You can be like, no. It's very difficult. Easter's difficult to receive. It's difficult to get our heads around what exactly is this good news? Where is God in this story? What does this have to do with us now? What kind of holiness is at work here? Why do we tell stories, and this is a question again for all of you, why do we tell stories of violence, even gore, of ambiguous endings? How do those stories feed our souls and help us to build an earth as in heaven? It evokes our emotions. How is that a good thing, Melissa? Yeah, it gets us talking, right? We have to get out of our little shells if we're going to encounter a story like this together. Yeah. Jan, I can tell you're thinking. Okay, we'll come back. You're just thinking. Gotcha.
Not a lot of clear, unambiguous ending.
No.
And so, you know,
Amen. Sermon done. Right? So I'm going to repeat it. So there is very little certainty in our lives. I don't have certainty in my life. None of us have certainty in our lives. None of us really know how to receive death, what death means, what it's going to feel like, how to live into it afterward. Grief is hard. And as Brad said, too, it gives us empathy. It gives us empathy for others in these dangerous, violent, open-ended times. Maybe sitting with these stories is what prepares us for these days. So Samson is born blessed by God and with this enormous physical strength, which he then seems to squander. He seems to shove God away with his arrogance or blinded by love. He seems lost. Now, I don't think God ever actually leaves him. I don't think God is capable of leaving us. It sounds to me more like Samson didn't uphold his end of the conversation. He didn't pay attention. Jesus is born blessed by God and with enormous faith. And he leverages that blessing and that faith to remind people of God's covenant with us, to remind us of the work we have to do together, the chesed that we talked about last week, and that human rule is impermanent. Empires will fall. But even Jesus experiences suffering, doubt, anger, hunger, fatigue. Even Jesus in resurrection doesn't have restoration. He doesn't go back to what he was before. He becomes something new, different, difficult to understand. But I think that story, these stories have more to offer us than the stories we're sold every day now in our world. Stories like, everyone can work hard, and if they do, they will all achieve millions. Doesn't matter who you are, where you're born, or any of those things. The story that if you're thin and you're rich, you'll be permanently happy. The story that if you get enough stuff, all your needs will be met. The story that, oh no, racism isn't interwoven into every fabric of our lives. The story that trans people don't exist. If we buy those stories, we will be ill prepared for when the roof comes tumbling down as the oppressed push on those columns. We will be ill prepared for when a prophet comes and tells the truth about our own complicity in those violences. Better to sit with these stories. Sit with these stories and their ambiguity, their questions, their multiple interpretations for good and for bad. Better to receive them and not try to create tidy endings. Don't try to create tidy, happy endings, because then we will maybe be ready. When this afternoon, tomorrow, next week, violence rises up again, death comes to our doors, we won't find ourselves feeling like failures. We won't feel compelled to defend the oppressor. Instead, we will be right there. We will have long enough hair. We will have bold enough speech. We will have enough intimacy with God to partake in telling the truth and to be the people this world needs to have faith in a future, whatever that future might hold. Amen.